destroy it, and the guy bats the cop's hand away. The cop was not on duty. And this all took place, you know, what, within a week or so ago at the Charleston Town Center Mall in Charleston, West Virginia. And the cop then put him to the ground, damn near, you know, broke his arm behind him.
Right, put him in the hammer lock and told him, you know, and the guy was telling him it would dislocate, and
yeah, I got a bad shoulder. You're about to dislocate it. Please don't dislocate my shoulder.
And he said, well, if it dislocates, we'll call JanCare. We'll call the ambulance. So, yeah, it looks like a big lawsuit that's going to happen.
Yeah, off-duty cop who's moonlighting as a rent-a-cop for the mall security.
Yeah, well, but they let him, and they've had trouble there before with this double-dipping. They've had two big trials, and they're letting them wear their uniform and their gun and stuff. And the line between what a mall cop can do and what, you know, the off-duty cop that suddenly becomes on-duty so he can arrest this guy on some chump charges and, you know, it's not good.
No, and it's funny, the spokeswoman for the mall said, well, you know, typical patrons of the mall are welcome to take photographs. And that's where she stepped in it, because the guy was not on duty, and he's not a, and that's why I made a point, Jethro, of noting the guy's not a photographer. He is a videographer, and there's a big difference between the two.
Right. And there's another suit, some guy was taking pictures of the state police or something at the courthouse building there in Charleston, and, one police car was straddling two handicapped spots, and they came over and arrested that guy and roughed him up. So it's I guess the police don't like having your picture taken, but the point out, you know, in a democracy the police need to, you know, to act the way that the public wants them to. They need to be accountable to the public. And this, you know, but in a police state, you know, you have to adjust your actions to suit the police.
Absolutely. And that's part of it. It is a police state. You know, when you see these guys in their riot gear and stuff, there's no more, you know, name on the uniform. And the badge numbers are covered up if there's a badge.
Oh, yeah. Well, I saw one at the anti-mountaintop removal rally there. Had the big greens on and looked all militaried up and... didn't say West Virginia Police, State Police had special ops on it.
Yeah.
I was going, special ops? What's he doing down here? Of course, I don't know. I don't know what they thought was going to. At least they didn't have the automatic weapons.
Well, I was going to say, if you recall the June 23rd rally down at Marsh Fork, I don't know if you were there or not, Jethro, but there were snipers on the roof of Marsh Fork Elementary for that one.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a little bit. But, you know, the fact of the matter is we're a bunch of peaceniks. I don't know, maybe they would have come in handy if one of the MTR violence brigade had started shooting.
I hear you.
But then again, I don't care how good a sniper you are. I'm not crazy about the notion of shooting into crowds.
I hear you. So, yeah, it's just madness. I'll tell you what. So, I was reading Maureen Dowd's column over the weekend.
Yeah, she hates everybody.
Yeah, well, her column was pretty much, you know, our puppets aren't what they used to be. Because she had accompanied Gates over to Iraq and Afghanistan. And where they were pretty much... dictating the terms to Gates, because they know no matter how much they dither or whatever they do, we're stuck spending billions of dollars no matter what. We're in there and we're stuck, and they know it. So it's and you know, they were saying, you know, Obama was saying we're going to get out of Afghanistan in 2011, and Karzai stood right there and said, you know, it'll be 15 or 20 years before we're even going to think about being able to have our own police and our own army and stuff.
Yeah.
I got a feeling
we're there for a while.
Yeah, she was saying, yeah, because, you know, if you want to take your average Afghanistani, you have to teach them how to read and write, or we can start, you know, having him harass people and charge them with stuff. And so then they go to, and then Gates finds out, he has a big revelation that the Taliban is paying men $250, $300 a day to fight for them, and they only have the Afghani army paying them $120 a day.
Oops, we're losing a bidding war.
So they raised it to $240.
No, wait. They're getting paid $250, and we raised it to $240. apparently, Secretary Gates has never been to an auction.
The American way, buddy.
I got 230. Who'll give me 240? Who'll give me 240? 228. No! You know, oh.
Yeah, those guys are just going cha-ching, cha-ching. So then he's in Iraq or something. He wasn't meeting with Maliki, but he was meeting with some prime minister or something. And they were having some kind of a big legislative deal. He was in front of their parliament or something answering why they had all these big bomb attacks there a couple of days ago that killed all these people. And I mean, you know, they're really super big, like killed a couple hundred people and injured, I don't know how many. So he was answering for that, and he kind of stood Gates up. But then when he returned, he was checking Gates out and talking, and in public he said, well, you know, you look pretty young here in person. He said, on TV and stuff, you look much older.
You know what was kind of surprising? You know, I'm kind of a college football geek. So I sat down to watch the Army-Navy game this past Saturday. And lo and behold, Gates had made it back for that.
Hmm.
They had the big fuel-wasting thing where they flew some Osprey troop transports over the field. And, you know, it's a twin-engined airplane that has rotating engines that turn it into a helicopter. The only problem is that for years and years and years, they'd test the thing, and when they tried to turn it into a helicopter, it turned into a doorstop.
Suicide mission.
Yeah, just testing an airplane, mind you.
Yeah. Yeah, they had several crashes and had men killed and stuff, and they still pushed, you know, that's just shows you the power of the military-industrial complex. They can push those programs and get those billions of dollars in on junk.
Yeah, and as soon as the clueless CBS announcers said, and here come the Ospreys, I was, please don't let it crash. Please don't let it crash. Please don't let it crash. I mean, it's worse than the Chick-fil-A cows parachuting into the football stadium.
Yeah. But this guy basically, you know, in Iraqi terms, he basically humiliated Gates by telling him, you know, that he looked much younger in person than he did because he looked much older, you know, as he came on TV and stuff. So that whole deal over there is a mess, and I don't know. The ballyhoo, the big Army-Navy game, I don't know where we're headed. And you're on the, there's so many people who still insist. It's the same thing that happened when Clinton took over, you know, years ago. Clinton and the UN are going to take your guns. The UN is going to take over.
Oh, you know, God, I know.
They're going to ruin the Constitution. They're going to take your guns.
Those men in the blue helmets will be right there on Main Street.
I'm telling these people, you ain't never been to West Virginia now, have you? I said, they ain't going to take nobody's guns. I said, it's culture here. You know, it's culture.
Yeah, we ain't kidding about that whole cold dead fingers part.
Yeah. If you're not armed with the teeth, you're not a West Virginian. When you're born in West Virginia, you know, the delivery doctor slaps you on the hind end, and then hands you a 12-gauge pump, you know, so.
Well, I guess I had one that was a little more kid-friendly. He handed mine a 410, but, you know. You know, just because of the kick.
Yeah, so this business of somebody going to take over your guns and the United Nations and whoever, you know, it just shows you how people can be manipulated in their thinking by just a constant stream of fear-mongering and propaganda, and it's amazing, actually. And unreal, it's just, you just wonder, are people, you know, under some kind of a hypnotic trance, or what are they sending out over TV and stuff? Because, I don't know, it's like mass hypnotism or something.
I think you're getting very, very, very close to the truth, Jethro. We don't have to even go into the trance anymore. It's just the hypnosis of things. It's the big lie theory. Just repeat it and over and over and over and over and louder and louder and louder and louder, and pretty soon it turns into the truth.
Yeah, you know, it's like the Morlocks are in control now. We're the Eloi or whatever, you know, the Elohim or something. You know, we're now the prey, and we've been beaten down so much, you know, when the horn and the and these things sound, the horn sounds, and the Eloi start walking zombie-like, you know, to their own doom. That's us, human lemmings, without even a thought. Then the door shuts, and you don't get taken, and the, yeah, you go back to the same deal until the horn sounds again. I don't see how we have gotten to this point.
It would take us the rest of the program, Jethro, but I think I do. I mean, it's media.
Yeah, media and corporate greed and, you know, the machine and the rich it's more like feudalism. You know, our profits, our work, you know, we have a place to live, and we have a few basic necessities.
Well, yeah, and, you know, that email that I had earlier from the anonymous listener that said, you know, let's compare the two. A woman spends her life raising children in France, and she's got all of her health care attended to. A woman spends her life raising her children in the United States, and she dies a miserable death without health care.
Right. And you have people, you know, you have people who will just swear up and down and hee-haw and just do everything to say that we've got the best health care in the world. And we are way down, you know. Our infant mortality rate is the pits. We're in the pits in a lot of areas. Yeah, we've got some specialty care. If you've got the big bucks and these specialists are just elitist doctors, yeah, you can come for that care if you've got the money. But it shouldn't be like that. That's not the whole intent of the Hippocratic Oath and the whole deal anyway. And even, you know, that just shows you how depraved and how materialistic we are and away from our spiritual nature by everything being a business and the healing arts becoming a business, a money-making. The hospitals are profit-oriented, and it's, they've become mills.
Mills. Yeah.
It's outrageous.
It's so pervasive. I mean, this is a great place to bring this up, Jethro. I think you've got a Facebook page, don't you?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, lots of us do. And you know, there are those little games out there. There's
Bodinian.
Yes. Bodinian. Exactly.
Yeah.
There are these little Facebook games like Mafia Wars, and there's a game where you're a farmer, and you don't buy stuff for it by, you know, ponying up bucks. You buy stuff for it by participating with advertisers who then give you the virtual money to, like, you know, buy your Mafia machine gun, that kind of thing, right?
Right.
Okay. Well, it turns out that there is that one of those AstroTurf punches is offering virtual Facebook dollars in exchange for people clicking a link and then sending sending letters to their elected representatives telling them they don't want health care reform.
Mm.
You know, that shouldn't... I mean, it's one thing to get somebody to click a link and look at the new McDonald's burger. It's another thing to get people to click a link and then actively work against their own best interests.
Right, right. Well, yeah, it's a bait and switch. You get them clicking all this mindless stuff and all these applications that you... I mean, there's millions of applications on Facebook. And, you know, send the happy heart, send the Merry Christmas, send the Christmas ornaments, and then you allow them to get all of your information. And it's crazy. And then you get used to just click, click, click. But, you know, same thing with the Mafia Wars. It's basically, you know, you're thinking you're getting something, but all you're doing is clicking.
Yeah.
Click, click, click. Well, now I got $3 million. Click, click, click. Oh, okay, I was off somebody. Click, click, click. Hey, I got a 32 Roadster. Hey, it's fantasy land. You know. And
but then again, a fantasy land is what people whose realities are so daggum grim, Jethro, are desperately in search of.
Oh yeah, and it just kind of gets you used to, you know. Yeah, how many kills do you have? You know, put somebody on the hit list. It kind of smooths over death. And this, and actually, this latest video game, Modern Warfare, Call of Duty, what number?
4, I think.
It's in Russia, and they've got a episode in there where you are a member of a team, and you go in and you start gunning down a crowd of civilians inside an airport. I mean, you just, every one of them.
Man, and we thought Grand Theft Auto was bad.
Yeah. And so it's,
well, but look at, you know, look at some of the, and wow, I'm so not going to go Hillary Clinton and get all worked up about video games, but, you know, there's another, Assassin's Creed. I'll say that I've played these things and they're kind of fun. But if you're not awake and aware of what's going on, that you are being anesthetized to the concept of killing and slaughter, then perhaps there are some aspects of it that are dangerous. I mean, we didn't like it very much, did we, when they put out, Left Behind Jesus Brigade or whatever it was. Remember that thing? That was the one where you were, proselytizing for Jesus in the end times, and you recharged your gun by shooting the queers.
That's not funny, but just, I mean, it's so outrageous. It's just so crazy. The things that, the illusion that we are presented and just spoon-fed.
Well, you know, I drove over to Beckley yesterday just to sit down and have talk time with Dr. Bill, who's doing well, by the way.
Good.
He really misses being on the horn, but at any rate, I took my son with me, and you've met my son. And we were talking along the way. He's actually, and I'm really proud of him, being as how he is an adolescent, almost 14-year-old boy. He's taking a real interest in these things called books. And I something dawned on me, because every now and then I have to remind myself that I was his age once upon a time. It's a function of what happens to you, Jethro, when your geezer gene kicks in.
I hear you.
But I have to remember that I was his age one time, and it dawned on me, you know, the first time that I ever read Kurt Vonnegut, I was his age.
He's good. He's ready for it. He's ready for Slaughterhouse 5 and the whole deal.
Sirens of Titan and Breakfast of Champions and God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater. So, if you're like me, for me, Vonnegut books are the equivalent of, like, Bruce Springsteen albums in music.
Oh, yeah.
And that is, you might buy it once, you'll buy it again, you'll buy it because they're constantly being borrowed forever or taken by the girlfriend. Or, you know, but you wind up going, oh, where'd that go? Oh, I got to buy it again. So I got to go out and get my hands on the Vonnegut library again so I can turn my kids onto it.
Cool. Yeah, that would be good.
Oh, yeah, and I'm reminded that Left Behind Eternal Forces, that's what it was, Left Behind Eternal Forces, that you also got points in that game for converting the Jews.
Now, was that Tim LaHaye creation there? Or?
Yeah, that was the video game that came off of those miserable Tim LaHaye books.
Oh, yeah, the books, videos, and the video game. Whew, what a marketeer.
Oh, yeah, they made the trifecta, Jethro.
Talk about the changelenders in the temple. Yeah, I tell you what. Yeah, well, I don't know, Obama, I'm not sure about him. There's some things he can do, and obviously, I guess it doesn't matter who the president is. there's some things that they can't do. So you always hope for the best. I mean, I had real high hopes for Clinton, too, and those were kind of dashed on the rocks of despair. So.
Or the rocks of realpolitik. But you know what? I don't hate to say it. It's just I look back, and I was doing it the other day, and those years of Clinton, you know, 93 to 2001, they were, I'm sure I'm going to get hate mail over this, they were pretty decent. You know, no wars in Afghanistan, no wars in Iraq. You know, yeah, we had the whole no-fly zone, starve the babies to death, kill a million children thing going on.
Right, and we had the Bosnia thing, which was really basically a manufactured deal to get the World Bank and the IMF and stuff in there, so they had to borrow money to rebuild and everything.
Right, you know, it's mob business.
Yeah, it's just like so it doesn't matter who the president is now. Some of these world shaking events and our involvement in it are obviously being controlled by somebody else. I mean, Obama campaigned on doing this and that in Afghanistan, but he also campaigned on change, and he could have changed his mind. And this deal with McChrystal and all this other hooey, I just maybe he decided he would let the generals try it, you know, for a while, and then if they didn't work it out, then try to extract them. But it's going to be too late then. Another year and a half, and it's just going to be bad news.
And you know, we're on the verge of kissing goodbye this sorry year that we hope. And that's, you know, we used to say goodbye to the sorry years of the Bush administration, Jethro, and say, well, you know, we're 1 year closer to being done with that evil little clown. But this closing out this year may be actually, wow, what a bummer I am, worse.
Yeah.
Because this was a year that dawned with great hope, you know, great anticipation for correcting, for righting the ship of state, for correcting things that had been done horribly wrong. And I know that there are lists out there showing 91 things that Barack Obama has done, but I sure don't feel them.
Right. Well, the things for the people aren't being done. It's more the same song and dance. It's kind of like the moral of the you know, Rip Van Winkle deal there. You know, he's gone for 20 years, and the main street's not King George Street anymore. It's, you know, it's George Washington Street, and you know, things haven't changed, just the names of them have. So.
Yeah.
And but there's always hope. I mean, you know, you got to keep sawing wood. There's no giving up, because when you give up and you quit and you lose the fight, then you become the lemmings and the illoy, and when the horn rings, you just, you know, about face and start heading through your own destruction. You gotta keep the fire going inside and just keep trucking and making a contribution. That's the only thing you can do is basically as an individual, and hope that snowballs into a group thing. Like-minded individuals. That's the only hope that we have, I think. And try to end this corporate deal, this machine of grinding the humans down. It's like the Matrix or something. You know, we've betrayed the machines too. Now they've taken over, and they realize that we're like Agent Smith was telling Morpheus. You know, you guys are like a virus. Bread like some.
I know.
And then you just wonder, but that's one way of looking at it. I think there's hope for the humans. I think we're in an evolutionary cycle, and the future is going to be ours. But right now we have to work for that future, and there's some, you know.
And that's precisely the point, Jethro. We can't sit around and wait for the good things to happen.
Right. Because the materialistic forces, the darker forces, are you know, they're fighting hard as well. the basis of the Bhagavad.
You are most likely wondering why it is that you're hearing a rerun from last night instead of prayer meeting tonight, Wednesday. Well, the reason for that is because the main machine that we use for getting the vast majority of the program out on any given night is grievously infected with some sort of god-awful virus right now. And I can't get it to run. Now, technically, I have the ability. You're hearing me live right now. Oh, hi, I'm Bob. But I can't run any audio. I can't run any bumper music. I can't run intros, outros, nothing. Because of the fact that the production computer is stone dead. So I'm going to be working on that for a while, and so I thank you very kindly for your patience, and I apologize for not being on the air. I apologize profusely. If worst comes to worst, I will have to pull this computer and put in the emergency backup computer, which itself is a labor of some effort. So cross your fingers, hope for the best. And with any luck at all, I'll be back tomorrow night. Thanks, everybody. Dougherty, go.
He really is. He is the physical
claim that the Connecticut Independent. With $200 of his own, which, if that happened,
the Jewish way to spend my evening,
then ticket to see somebody tell Joe Lieberman exactly.
When I saw House Majority Leader idiotic war,
please,
oil product, and a few others. Dennis Kucinich, Earl Blumenauer, Ron Paul. Who, as I watched the debate, and he said, you know, in June of 1941, we had a sanctions bill go through against Japan that did the same thing that this sanction bill does against Iran. That is, forbid the sale of refined oil products to the Empire of Japan, as this resolution would forbid the sale to Iran. He said that was June 1941, and by December we had a war because an attack had been precipitated. And you'll forgive me, because I hope, because I am sort of historically biased. There was an element of truth in what Ron Paul said. But there are also sort of rules, I mean, they're not written rules or anything, but there are rules at work, such as don't make weak arguments, because strong arguments never make weak arguments stronger, but weak arguments always make strong arguments weaker. And lo and behold, some yahoo on the other side who can't wait to rain murder and death and mayhem and misery on 20-somethings who want a new pair of jeans, stood up and said, well, if you believe that America was wrong for getting into World War II, you need to be a-voting over there with that Ron Paul. And I'm watching all this go down, and I'm like, oh, shoot. Don't bring out the anarcho-Randian claptrap in a life and death fight
to keep America from starting another idiotic war. Please. Please.
Congressman Kucinich was his usual brilliant self, armed with facts, not beliefs. I wish I had tape of it, or TiVo or whatever. Geezer, I still talk about tape. But I'd like to go back and see how many times the proponents of this sanctions bill against Iran, I'd like to know how many times they use the word believe, 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 believe. Because in pursuing this bill for sanctions against Iran, they cast all reason right out the window. You know, I admit from time to time to having just a little bit of idealism left in me. And I had hoped, against hope, that maybe we were on the way to getting the hell out of Iraq, and that there might be some even just razor-thin, slim chance that sometime sooner rather than later we would be getting out of Afghanistan. And I look at these things, and I have very, very real, very, very personal reasons for wanting us not to be there. Because I have a 13-year-old daughter, I mean a 12-year-old daughter, a 13-year-old son, a 15-year-old daughter, and a not-quite-2-year-old grandson. And I don't want that crap going on during their childhoods. And as they reach adulthood, I don't want that crap happening so that they can be fed into the grinders. I admit I'm personally biased in this, very much so. But you watch, to have watched this debate, well, first of all, you found out in this debate who, because sooner or later, our good friend Israel would come into the discussion, at which point you knew what this was really all about. This was an AIPAC roll call, so that they could know who to make out the little Christmas cards with checks in them. I guess Dennis won't be getting one. But that's in large part what it was. But it's also a manifestation of an urge to war. And again, as someone who does pay attention to history and a little bit of the nature and history of the Constitution of the United States, it was right annoying, because the fact of the matter is, there they were contemplating their sanctions argument, and the answer to it was to say, listen, you jackasses, quit talking about sanctions. It is clear that you want war. If it is war that you want, you are the House of Representatives. You have the power to declare war. The president cannot tell you no. If it is war that you ache for with Iran, if it is war that you yearn for with Iran, if it is the blood of American children that you fairly lust to spill all over ancient Persia, then for the love of God, take that power which you have, which the Constitution gives you, and use it, and declare war on Iran. Quit talking about it. Quit masturbating over it. Do it. So that then we can know who the traitors to America are who vote in favor of such madness. Email rolling in from Marty out in California. Yeah, he's just nothing but the subject line. If you want to hear me scream, tell me Keith Ellison of Minnesota also got up and screamed for sanction.
I did not see Keith Ellison do that. I just can't imagine that he would have. When I first read the subject line, I was going, I'll watch this thing. No, he didn't. Did I miss something? No, I don't think Keith Ellison was there. But Donna Edwards was. Donna Edwards was. Proud of Earl Blue. And you know who else spoke up on besides Ron Paul? From Arizona, Jeff Flake, who has been a real honest-to-God wingnut bobblehead. But he spoke up against it as well. And, I get what? The enemy of my enemy is my friend? Yeah. So, just some thoughts as we deal with our little foreshortened hour this evening. Let us go to the phones and see who we have. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
This is Richard.
Hey, Richard.
Oh, I didn't know I would be on. I'm cleaning my drain.
You want me to put you on hold and come back when the drain's clean?
I'm here. Everything's fine. Well, my stack is kind of small.
Okay.
And can you hear me okay?
I hear you fine.
Okay. Turn off that echo chamber. Well, I got too much in my own stack here. So, I've been thinking about... I'll cut down my stack. Save some for another call. You know, I've been thinking about General Motors, and I'll tell you something. I would not buy a car from them. And the reason is because of who's running it. And I forgot the guy's name, but he came from SBC, which transformed itself into AT&T.
Oh, that SBC. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. And, I feel that I would be at GM's mercy. I would be at his mercy. And I don't like the way this guy does business, and I forgot his name. But, he built SBC into a giant by gobbling up every other phone company he could get his hands on.
Isn't that the business model, though? I mean, whether you can afford it or not, just buy everything?
Yeah.
It's kind of like playing Monopoly, isn't it? You know, you get that first little stack of cash and the first few trips around the board, whatever you land on, I'll buy it, I'll buy it, I'll buy it, and then you can't make $12 rent on the Baltic Avenue.
Well, I think I watched the game plan, and you remember, of course, that AT&T got broken up.
Right.
And remained in the long-distance business. And I was involved. I was doing a project at Pacific Bell when SBC bought Pacific Bell, and the SBC Southwest Bell is the Texans. So the first thing they did was they came in and they said, "You got to take all the decorations down in your cubicles, and we're going to cut the size of the cubicles by a third, put more people in here." And we're taking you people and moving you all to Texas. So
anything but that.
Yeah, well, I was not an employee of the phone company. I was contracted, and one of the many hats I've worn in my life, doing documentation for them. But I've been watching what they've been doing. See, let's go back to the way.
And I'm told you're talking about Edward E. Ed Whitaker, Jr.
That's correct, Ed Whitaker. The telephone service involves two distinctly separate types of operation. The first is basic telephone service, which probably in every state is regulated in some way by a state regulatory agency. So here in California, for instance, it's your you know, your connection to the network, it's your dial tone, it's your local phone calling, and phone calling within a small region. So this is regulated, and the phone company has to charge what they're allowed to by law.
Under the tariffs of the given public service commission.
Exactly. Everything else is unregulated, and they can charge whatever they want. So call waiting ID, caller ID, you know, blah, 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 you know, 60 different services, including voicemail, is they can charge whatever they want. Sky's the limit. And when you buy a bundle from AT&T, let's say you get local calling, you get long-distance calling, you get voicemail, you get caller ID, blah, 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 and they give you a rate. That rate is not cast in stone. So
no, that's subject to manipulation on everything except those that thing which has a tariff on it.
Exactly, but that's buried in the bundle, you know. No way of extricating it, really.
Yeah, what is it Reverbo likes to say? Your experience may not be the same.
Well, I had a friend who had, you know, one of these bundles. And it was around, I think it was around January of a year or two ago, FCC started making noise about buying AT&T. All of a sudden, her rate shot up, you know. That's how they bought AT&T. They needed a little more money. Just soak the customers. So, I don't know. Right now, I'm down to basic phone service. I mean, I detest these people. But I'm anticipating that a General Motors car bought right now is going to be a piece of junk.
Well, let me ask real quick. We're talking about landline service then when you...
Yeah, I'm talking about landline service. Oh, because wireless is, that's almost totally unregulated.
Yeah, wireless is Wild West. And you know what? It's a great little petri dish, if you will, Richard, for whether or not the free market is everything they say the free market is. Are rates going down, or are they going up in the wireless market?
I have no way of knowing, you know. I know what I told my son to do. He wanted to get a cell phone. I told him to sign up with a company called
Credo?
Metro.
Huh.
Metro PCS. It's very simple and plain. You prepay by the month, you get a flat monthly rate, and you make all the phone calls you want, period. The only drawback is that the range, your range, is limited. In that, you know, just like their name is, your service is confined to local areas, to metropolitan areas, which around here are very large. So that's what you give up. You can't go, like, into the middle of Nevada and start.
Right, right.
Won't happen. But he's got a special rate, I think it's $35 a month flat. He can make long-distance calls, you know, et cetera. But there's no metering. And I think this is a fantastic plan or business model because there is no billing expense. And in my mind, you know.
Get the money, flip the switch, get the money.
What's that?
Get the money, flip the switch, get the money. Keep getting the money.
That's it. Just that. Because the various projects I've been involved with the phone company have on the billing side.
Well, I mean, you know, it's no secret around here. When we go and do remote things, we learned by dint of hard experience, Richard, that we count on someone else's internet at our peril.
So how do you do it?
That's what I was getting at. We have service through AT&T Wireless, and we pay an exorbitant amount for being able to tether a smart cell phone to a laptop and get out to the stream that way.
Okay, so if I understand what you're saying, what you're getting from AT&T is reliable service.
They're not everywhere. For instance, it makes no sense for me to have their tethering service here at the studio because they don't offer me their 3G wireless broadband here where we are. Mm-hmm. So if I'm going to be broadcasting from Charleston or Washington, D.C. or something like that, or Pittsburgh, I either stop by the store or I call them and I say, please turn on tethering. And as soon as I'm done, I call them and I say, please turn off tethering.
Now, what is tethering?
Tethering is where you literally tether a smart cell phone to a laptop, or theoretically to a desktop computer, either one. But it then turns your cell phone into, for all intents and purposes, a wireless modem.
Okay.
But it costs out the gazoo, relatively speaking, and isn't worth having here. But, you know, we get a prorated rate, but still, you know, believe me, we get screwed. Every now and then I'll get an email from them saying, sign up for paperless billing. And the green side of me says, yeah, Bob, do that. Sign up for the paperless billing. And the oh, God, how I hate corporations side of me says, oh, no, you're billing me for that. You're not cutting me a rate for going to paperless billing. You're just giving me a little green ego stroke. Now, if you cut my rate by $15 for paperless billing, then we'll talk.
Yeah. The other thing, too, is that if they send you a bill in the mail, you have it on paper.
Exactly.
You have a firm...
You know, Credo Mobile is a great little outfit.
Yeah, they're not far from me.
But I can't get them because I live in the middle of nowhere.
Well, the other problem is that they're screwy about assessing sales. Utility tax to their calls. They assign tax by zip code, and that's crazy. Not by where you actually physically live. So I found that, it slowly dawned on me that I was paying taxes to places where I didn't live. I lost a lot of money in taxes, you know, on my phone calls.
Right.
In fact, last place I lived was in Kensington, California, which is a little upscale sort of community that is located in this county, in Contra Costa County, and the postal zip code was of Berkeley, California, which is in a different county, and they were collecting tax from me to Berkeley because I was in a Berkeley zip code. So, I mean, this is preposterous.
And so the guy who was behind so much of AT&T is the guy who's at GM, right?
Yeah. But see, when he bought into all these old baby bells, what he picked up,
right?
You know, the remnants of the old AT&T, he bought into very well established networks that did things properly. So on the technical side, they, for instance, the state of California, they have it actually gridded off into square miles for the purposes of billing the entire state, almost the entire state.
So that's a ruthlessly efficient billing mechanism, then.
Yeah, and for taxing, they assess the tax based on your actual physical location. So they have a tremendous investment in software to make this all happen. But I would say that probably the biggest part of your telephone call that you charged for is billing. It's so complicated, you know.
Yeah.
It's amazing that it works, but it amazes me that the telephone system works at all because it works so well. I'm talking about landlines now. It boggles me because I've worked within this company, and you can't depend on anything working from one day to the next. I mean, inside the phone company. Will the printer work today? Yes. No. Will the machine work? Maybe.
Mostly.
Yeah. I mean, if your printer goes, I was in an office with five other people, you know, a room with five other people, and we had one printer. But we weren't printing across the room. We were printing via a network. So if the printer wouldn't work, we had to call the printer expert. And his name was Druid, and he looked like one. And he would...
Well, of course, they're supposed to.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a very crazy situation, but I'm digressing. You know, I was talking about...
Brings in a little boy with antlers on his head, feeds him well, kills him on top of the printer, Fisher King. Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, the guy was dressed in black and had this huge medallion dangling from his neck. He was a good guy, you know. it's amazing. Within the belly of the monster, there's all kinds of people, but I couldn't handle it. I can't work it.
And Richard ran screaming from the building.
Just about. After I finished the contract, I couldn't handle it anymore. But the, the thing is, the guy comes from this environment, and his philosophy essentially is screw the customer, maybe screw the stockholders, of course, screw the employee.
And speaking of screw the employees, I don't know if you noticed this or not, Richard, but, those economic geniuses of the Republican Party actually had the gall to come out in the last day or so and say that we're going to create jobs by, and this is fun, wait for it, because you said screw the workers, by cutting the minimum wage.
Oh, that's not going to, jeez.
I know.
At what point do their own constituents, kick them out? That's amazing.
Well, that's the beauty of the system. Never. Hey, Richard, I have to roll on. I want to get one more call in before I have to blow out of here because it's a short show tonight.
Good talk with you, man.
Good talking to you, Richard. Bye now.
Okay, see ya.
Richard calling from California, and onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Brother Luke, what's up?
Well, I see that the long-distance call finally came in, and Brother Oral had to call.
The Lord called him home, yes.
Yes, indeed. No more waiting, no more having to get raise some money. It's time to go. Oh, I'm just sitting here going, if these Republicans and all these want to go to war, like I said, first thing we ought to do is we ought to send about 20 recruiters to Oral Roberts University, about 20 of them to Liberty University, about 20 to Regent University, and tell them, you guys got a quota. I don't want you to sign people up here. And when you're done, you're going to come back and we're going to report it. We're going to go on Good Morning America and the Today Show and tell them how many of these hard-working kids decided they wanted to go because it was the patriotic thing to do.
Here, here.
You know, I want to see some pictures. I want to see them standing out there in crowds to sign up. You know, but that ain't going to happen. We know that.
Yeah, probably not.
The one I sent you last night is, like I said, can we find somebody who's in charge of foreign aid to Israel and have them put a hold on it and have them just call Joe and say, Joe, until you come around, I'm not coming around either.
You know, I read that right at the very end of the show, and I thought, it's a lovely idea. But by the time I got around to reading it, Luke, lo and behold, the deed was done, and Joe had helped to kill another 45,000 Americans.
I know. It's one of those things you're just kind of just sitting there, guys. Can somebody open a window and tell Joe, look out there, your car's on fire. Oh! Looking at past, kind of through the cracks of the floor. The thing I sent you, I think, the other day. You see the thing there about Citadel Broadcasting?
Yeah, that they're right creepy.
Well, like I said, they're about to go Chapter 11.
Oh, what a lovely opportunity! If only there were some deep-pocketed liberals out there
licenses. George Soros, please. Somebody call George Soros. Tell him we got him an idea.
You know not of which you speak, and this is no insult. You know not of which you speak, Luke, because I've been working on something for a while now, trying to encourage people to get to get the people with the money off of their duffs and start taking back some of the airwaves. Of course. You know, just because they declare bankruptcy does not mean that they will lose their licenses.
Oh, no.
They'll get to reorganize, which means some workers get screwed. But
this also, though, is when they are generally vulnerable to somebody picking off some of their pieces of property, which I'm sitting there going, you know, we really should call this fellow named Buffett.
Oh, Warren?
Yeah, Warren. How about you and Mr. Gates? How would y'all like to have a little fun? Just think how much fun you can have when you look at Murdoch and just wave at him. And you're sitting there knowing his blood pressure just went up 10 points.
You know, that dovetails nicely with something that Texas Betsy sent me over the weekend. There is apparently a German study that says that men can add 5 years to their life expectancy by staring at the breasts of a well-endowed woman for about 10 minutes a day.
Well, I don't know if it works or not, but we'll give it a shot.
Yeah, I know. I can take one for the team, right?
Hey.
So we've got to get all this stuff working together, Luke. At the same time that we're going to run Rupert's blood pressure up a little bit, we have to make sure that there aren't any beautiful, big-busted women around him.
I know. Hey, well, you've seen this thing now that apparently Bill O and Beck and our half hour just saying this tizzy over this thing from Law and Order.
Did you catch Olbermann last night?
Oh, yes.
And you know, I got a note telling me to, you know, go forth and watch this, and I did. And I was told, you know, especially because Bart Cop got mentioned.
Yes.
So I immediately hopped on the series of tubes. You know, it's not a big truck.
I know.
And sent Bart a note saying, you know, my friend, you've hit the big time. I hope the website hits go through the roof, and I hope that, you know, your contributions go way up with it as well. Because when you watch someone like Bart Cop, who has been doing God's work. Going all the way back to when the inner tubes were just, you know, the size of a McDonald's straw. And you see, finally in 2009, Keith Olbermann mentioned something that Bart has been hammering away at for 10 flipping years. You know, you just go, hallelujah. You know, maybe this is one of those little tremors in the zeitgeist that means that because there's no assaulting, there is no assailing, there is no getting around the truth of what Olbermann said last night. You know, that long laundry list of people whose shows you can go on and complain that the media is liberally biased against you.
That was the thing that I wasn't expecting until that came up, and I was just like, you know, I mean, that ought to be, I'm sure that's somewhere on the tubes, but I mean, that's going to be the clip everybody's going to play, because I mean, he went on for about 2.5 minutes.
And I will say, this much, you know, I'm proud of the fact, Luke, that Bart's been saying that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm proud of the fact that Buzz Flash has been beaten on that. And I'm equally proud of the fact that for, you know, 4 or 5 years, we've been hammering at it here.
It's one of those things, you know, it's like I say, that unfortunately they drummed it into the point where the mainstream media played along with it. Oh, yeah, we're all liberal. And, you know, it's one of those things, like, well, gee, is that why then the GMA, every time you turn around, has one of those jackasses on, you know, in the morning to come on and do some commentary with them and talk with them? And amazingly enough, they don't question them. They just sit there and go, oh, go ahead and say what you want to.
And the funny thing, though, Luke, and you're a Bart Cop reader,
mm-hmm.
The funny thing, though, is that while Keith credited Bart Cop with the long laundry list of, you know, complain that you're not being heard on the liberal media. The other thing that he was doing way in front of that is also straight off of Bart Cop's page, and that is the sue him, file a suit, file a lawsuit.
Well, but now you got to admit, O'Reilly's. I mean, Olbermann's been on O'Reilly on that for years, you know, because Olbermann went after him, you know, when he did the Macris thing, and he did that, and you know, and he's done all those others where he sued them. You know, and a suit, you know, like he sued Franken, and we found out what happened with that. That's still one of the funnier things I ever heard, was just hearing Al Franken describe that. You know, this is why Bill O'Reilly don't sue people, because judges laugh him out of a court.
Well, exactly. Well, I tell you what, Luke, I had to do it, but I got a short night and got to hit it. But awful good hearing from you, and everybody send a congratulatory note to Bart Cop, just bartcop@bartcop.com. And congratulate him for hitting the big time with Olbermann last night, and say that, you know, you heard about it on the horn.
All righty.
All right, you take care, Luke. Bye now. And unfortunately, that brings us to the end of the live portion of tonight's show. So we will go out with a little tunage. Now, I want to share with you some thoughts, and I think them especially appropriate, given, you know, Lieberman, what he's doing to us, what he's doing to 45,000 of us a year. An email rolled in earlier today from our critic at large, Reverbo. And he says, he quotes a lyric. Once I was a rich man, now I am so poor, but never in my sweet short life have I felt like this before. And Reverbo says, to describe my attitude to current political events as dismayed is an understatement. Has everyone got the feeling that presidents just do as they're told? Our government certainly doesn't listen to us. We don't write their checks anymore. So, with that in mind, I present a selection from Beggar's Banquet, an apt title to the Rolling Stones' 1968 masterpiece. Think about that, 1968, over 40 years ago, and little has changed. A sad, drifting tune about how I feel at this point, no expectations. The fact is, Reverbo says, most of my life and that of my generation is behind me now, and we didn't get it done. Maybe the deck is so stacked no one can. What a legacy. Was Clint Eastwood right in The Unforgiven? Do we all have it coming? Does deserving have nothing to do with it? Then here we are. In less than 10,000 years, the highest life forms on Earth allow themselves to become one collective whore to a handful of pimps. Not too impressive. We did write some great lines, though. The love you take is equal to the love you make is beautiful and true, assuming you're motivated by love. Assuming that being is more important than having. Those who control us, unfortunately, don't feel that way, however. When Pete Townsend wrote about meeting the new boss, he couldn't have been more on target. But let me say, says Reverbo, I have no sympathy for the devil, because he keeps playing us for the same old clowns, and that strategy seems to work every time. That's enough Rolling Stones references. Let's get to the show. Or more appropriately, let's close the live portion of this one with that self-same tune Reverbo mentioned, No Expectations. We'll be back tomorrow night for prayer meeting. We'll just have a couple of hours of last night's program following now. I thank you very kindly for joining in for this short version. I regret the fact that it is a short version, but these things cannot be avoided, and I know that you would not ask me to step back from the activism that I encourage us all to participate in. Many thanks for the kind offer from Glenn in the UK, $200 matching funds, if we can bring $200 in between now and Friday. And I am pleased to say that $100 of that has arrived since I announced Glenn's offer. So thank you. Thank you, Glenn. And thank you, everyone, who helps meet Glenn's offer. Your kindness is beyond my ability. Our appreciation for your kindness is beyond our ability almost to express, save to say that you value this. We value you, and as long as you can, we will. So without further ado, riding off to the activist meeting music. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. Catch you tomorrow night.
around. You throw your pearls at swine, and as I watch you leaving me, you have my peace of mind.
Cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Hooray, 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 step right up. Get your place in line for the very, very thin price of nothing at all. You too can enter the tent of horrors and gaze at the freak that therein lie beyond. It's Moran Monday on the horn. Hooray, hooray, hurry. Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Moran Monday comes but once a week, and this is that once of the week that it comes, okay? Yeah. It is. It's Moran Monday on the horn, but this time I guess there's a little bit of an indictment for me in Moran Monday, because apparently I'm one of the Morans. And you may be too. Sorry. Because I was under the impression, legitimately held, that Joe Lieberman was only a senator, only a single member of a 100-person body. I was not under the impression that, which appears to be reality,
that he is actually Almighty God of all of us. That he has the power, in fact, literally, of life and death over us. What a bunch of morons we are, huh? A little frustrating. A little bit. If you don't know what that to which I allude, it would be the fact that Holy Joe Lieberman, Senator Droopy, as it were,
I don't think that you miserable plebs deserve any health insurance,
has declared that he will, by God, filibuster any health insurance reform bill that has a public option or even a Medicare buy-in in it. Wow. I guess he just told Barack Obama where to get off. That one. I guess Holy Joe just told Barack Obama exactly what he thinks of having, you know, one of those. Schwarzer. In the White House. I don't know. I don't know, John. How does that droopy dog MF forget to have so much sway? Oof. Oh, God. Joe Lieberman. Oh. But it does no good. I begged the sky god for a big old lightning bolt that would just bzzzt. Didn't happen. And we're the morons. And you know, we're the morons of Moran Monday in more ways than one. I offer you, as a matter of fact, I offer you this explanation. A very recent one, as a matter of fact, from the White House. Sit down. You're not going to like this. Today, that rag of dubious provenance, Politico, reported that the White House is pressuring... Huh? Wait, whose side are they on? What is pressuring Spineless Harry Reid to, quote-unquote, cut a deal with Holy Joe Lieberman? And that deal would involve dropping any public option or Medicare buy-in from the bill in order to win Holy Joe's support. The White House then issued a statement saying the report is inaccurate. How about that? Now, we pay attention to the language around here, don't we? The report is inaccurate is a distinctly different statement from the report is incorrect or the report is wrong. The quote is, the report is inaccurate. The White House is not pushing Senator Reid in any direction. See, we're dealing with Washingtonians, and as such, we must be most mindful of the use of language. Because there's a big difference between coming out and saying the report is inaccurate, the White House is not pushing Senator Reid in any direction, and coming out and saying, that's a damn lie! Big man, there's a gap between those two that you can drive a truck through. Right? Yeah. So we get, the report is inaccurate. The White House is not pushing Senator Reid in any direction. And here's my sense of why that is not an untruthful statement. Have you ever tried to push Jell-O? Have you ever tried to push goo? The more you push, the more it gives. The more you push, the more it caves. So I'm sure the White House isn't pushing Senator Harry Reid. He's unpushable. You can't push something. Push an oyster! You can't push an oyster! You push the oyster, and the oyster just sort of gives in and it surrounds back around your finger, just like Jell-O. So, later on, Robert Gibbs gave his press briefing. And, well, just, again, you know, this is all haiku. Listen, this is the music that happens in the silences between the notes. Pay attention now.
Robert, has the president picked up the phone and called Joe Lieberman about health care reform?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
What do you consider that? Is the report true?
Okay, that's an important one. Not that I'm aware of. No. Now, that's not to say that he hasn't. That's just to say that Robert Gibbs is not aware of him having done so. Okay? Language. It's language is so important.
That is published on Politico, that the White House is encouraging Senator Reid to sit down and make a deal with Lieberman and give up on the Medicare expansion.
I can only say this, Anna. The president is anxious to see progress and will continue to work with Democrats and Republicans and independents and everyone in between to make that progress, to take those steps.
Wait a minute. Now, I've got the transcription of that answer here. And we're not going to pull the grandmother Kincaid thing and whip out the blackboard and diagram that sentence because we'd all lose our minds. I can only say this, Anna, that the president is anxious to see progress. Okay? Define progress. You know what I mean? And we'll continue to work with Democrats and Republicans, and someone in the audience says, and independents, and Gibbs says, and independents, and everyone in between to make that progress and take those steps. The hell does that mean, everyone in between? How many anarcho-syndicalist members of the United States Senate are there? How many communist members of the Senate are there? How many National Socialist members of the Senate are there? Baggers need not answer that question. They think that everyone is. But, that's too much gobbledygook by half, isn't it? Let's go back.
And independents, and everyone in between. To make that progress, to take those steps.
Is this a serious problem with Senator Lieberman? Would the president get involved?
Well, the president's been involved. We wouldn't be sitting here the 14th of December, when you'd much rather be Christmas shopping, discussing the Senate being in on the weekends if the president wasn't involved. The president's been involved the whole time.
Okay, pardon me while I get a little sick. Now, this is a video moment, but it is kind of cute. Robert Gibbs looks down at his left wrist to find out exactly what day of the week it is when he says, we wouldn't be sitting here. Actually, he doesn't say you. The transcript is wrong in that regard. You wouldn't be sitting here, looks at watch, 14th of December. You'd much rather be Christmas shopping. The president's been involved the whole time. Yeah, a lot of us would rather be Christmas shopping, Mr. Gibbs. Let me see. I think I've got an example
of someone who would much rather be Christmas shopping. This will only take a minute. Because I've got her right here. Oh, here she is. Jacqueline Kelly would probably much rather be Christmas shopping. This from NJ.com, NewJersey.com. News from Hudson County. Melissa Hayes of the Jersey Journal reporting. Jacqueline Kelly, just to let Mr. Gibbs know, would very much rather be Christmas shopping. She can't be Christmas shopping, though, because she's dead. She died today. She died today, suffering all the way to the end from the effects of ovarian cancer and emphysema. She had no health insurance. Here's how that worked out. Jacqueline Kelly spent her life in service to her children and her grandchildren. She was what we call a stay-at-home mom. She raised 6 children. Then she helped to raise her grandchildren. All while her husband, John Kelly, busted his ass for 50 years as a truck driver. When her husband John retired, he got to go on Medicare. But Mrs. Kelly wasn't old enough. Remember, she died today. She was 61. When he retired and went on Medicare, there was no private insurance for Mrs. Kelly. And she was also told that because of the fact that she had never, and the moms in the audience are going to throw something at a wall, so if you're sitting around them, duck. She was also told that because she had never worked in her life, that she was not entitled to Social Security disability, which would have afforded her health care. This is one of those stories that I dare not share with Agnes, because she would have broken something, and it might have been in me. So they went to the New Jersey Department of Welfare. And because Mr. Kelly, John Kelly, had a pension of sorts, Mr. and Mrs. Kelly were told that they were far too wealthy for Jacqueline Kelly to receive any sort of benefits. What treatment they could get for Jacqueline Kelly, with her insides ravaged by ovarian cancer, they paid for out of pocket, and paid and paid and paid, and there was some write-off as charity from a local hospital. The $4,000 they received through fundraisers to assist with medical costs recently are now instead going to pay for her funeral. She received treatment at home from an outfit called Compassionate Care Hospice. They covered the cost of her hospice treatment through their foundation. Sandra Kelly is one of Jacqueline Kelly's daughters, and she said simply and eloquently, "It was very sad that we had to go through this, and we thank all those who donated to help my dad." You'll forgive me, but I think that that smacks of traditional family values. You know, the kind that we're supposed to have, right? The kind that's really important, according to our betters of the socially conservative stripe, often known as Republicans, or conservative Democrats, or blue dogs, or baggers and birthers and tenthers and deathers. I wonder if anyone has bothered to tell Holy Joe Lieberman about Jacqueline Kelly, aged 61 and still too young for Medicare, though now she lies dead. I wonder if Holy Joe is aware of the people that he is condemning a grim and anguished death. I only wonder. But I don't wonder. I know. I know that Holy Joe Lieberman lives in his own little world where he is deafened by the jingling sounds of the 30 pieces of silver. Actually, more like 917,000 pieces of silver that he receives from the insurance industry to betray working Americans to a cruel fate. He is stone deaf to the needs of the American people. He is immoral to a point of being sickening. But there's a lot of non-denial denials in the White House statement. Is the report true that's published on Politico that the White House is encouraging Senator Reid to sit down and make a deal with Lieberman and give up on the Medicare expansion? Answer: I can only say this, Anna, that the president is anxious to see progress. If you've got it handy, whip out your old and dog-eared copy of All the President's Men by Woodward and Bernstein and look up the phrase non-denial denial. Because that's one. But Jacqueline Kelly is just one of approximately 45,000 Americans per year, conservatively estimated, that Holy Joe Lieberman is willing to condemn to death. At this point, I have no trouble saying whatsoever that Holy Joe Lieberman is a sociopath, because he is utterly without
conscience in any form. He can hear the hue and cry of his masters in the insurance industry, but he is stone deaf to the needs of folks like the Kelly family. What does that say about the way that America still looks at the job of child care and child raising? What does it say that a woman who has done nothing with her life save for successfully raise to adulthood 6 human beings and help raise several more grandchildren, that she is deemed as a function of governmental delineation and designation to never have worked a day in her life? Just sat around eating bonbons, I suppose, and occasionally looking up and saying, "Max, I'm ready for my close-up." You know, there's work to be done in this country, and that's one of the things we have to do. We absolutely have to correct the notion that the only thing that qualifies as work in this country is the work that one does for financial remuneration. Because there's tons of work out there that doesn't pay. Not that doesn't pay well, that doesn't pay at all. There are people who volunteer at shelters and missions. The time spent helping to run a little league or being a member of the PTO at a middle school or some such, that is serious work, but is deemed by virtue of the fact that no holy prophet was attached to it to have not been work at all. A statement by the government, in essence, that whatever a person did, if they were not financially compensated for it, it did not matter. And in saying that the work did not matter, it is no stretch at all to understand that the further statement is that the person did not matter. And in oh so many ways, Jacqueline Kelly and the 44,999 others like her, at least where Joseph Lieberman is concerned, did not matter. So that's where we begin Moran Monday, with us. But don't worry, there are in fact a lot of other Morans who aren't us, and we will find them through the course of the program, I assure you. For now, however, let's go to the phones.
Hey.
Well, hey, Juanita.
I have a quote here for you.
Okie dokie.
The Antichrist is alive, walking around somewhere, and is a male Jew. That's by Jerry Falwell.
I was going to say, that just had to be Jerry Falwell.
I'm so sick of Joe Lieberman.
Well, I am too.
I'm sick of the Democrats letting him be here.
I mean, how hard? Juanita, let's just take a quick look. How hard would it be? Understanding, of course, that one would have to have a spine to pull something like this off. How hard would it be to if you're Harry Reid, to call Joe Lieberman in and say, Joe, buddy, how you doing? You really, really like that Homeland Security chairmanship you've got, don't you, Joe?
Why, yes, I'm rather...
It does.
Why, yes, I'm rather fond of it.
Well, listen, you little... I'm going to pull that chairmanship from you, and you're not going to chair jack squat.
Yes.
If you so much as burp that you might filibuster health care. Now, you can get in line and march with the rest of us, or you can, you know, lose it. Which do you want, Joe? But you see, again, that's beyond Harry Reid's capabilities.
Lord of mercy.
Because remember, he said,
I'm not going to force anybody. I'm just going to encourage people.
Well, I'm so sick. This thing could have been solved months ago if we hadn't had all this bipartisan. We were so bipartisan with Bush, that's one thing that's wrong with this country. It's a big deal because they were, what do you call it, enablers. Our party was enablers.
Yeah. Yeah. And we continue to enable.
And
I know there are, I saw a post on Facebook today, Juanita, from, I believe, Hallie Klein saying, scrap it all and come back with a Medicare buy-in for everybody over 50.
You know what? I was thinking the same thing. Why can't that just be done? I think it could have been done months ago. And, shoot, I would even allow the president to say, hey, this is a mandate. I'm declaring a mandate. We're not going to vote on this. We're going to help our people out.
You know, do it and use budget reconciliation, and then all that 60-vote nonsense goes right out the window.
Right.
And I know, and I understand, Juanita, that I understand, I comprehend, as do we all, that there are risks inherent with that, such as what Lottie pointed out on the show the other night, that, you know, the insurance companies will be happy as a clam because it will take the sick people off of their rolls and put them on Medicare.
Yeah.
But you know, the fact of the matter is, at this point in time, I have to be concerned, or I feel like, as a human being, I have to be concerned about the Jacqueline Kellys of the world.
Yeah.
We've got to get coverage to people.
And there's yin and yang to everything in this life. There's nothing perfect. We're not going to get nothing perfect. But I would just like it to be taken away from the insurance companies. They've got no business being involved. They've got no business being involved whatsoever.
I'm all for strangling them.
And me too.
Yeah, financially speaking, I mean, I'm not.
Oh,
you know,
yeah. I don't want
anybody going after any any insurance company CEOs with the piano wire or anything. I am for financially strangling the insurance industry at this point.
But I'm wondering who made Joe Lieberman king of the world. I mean, please, I'm just so tired of that guy.
Who made him president? That's the point. That's the point I got started with, Juanita. Who made him president?
Right. He's using more power, especially more power than Obama or any of them. I'm tired of this guy. And he's going to be in there, what, another 6 years?
No, he was up in 2006. He'll be there till 12.
But you know what? I wish that they would take that away from him, because I remember the first day he got back on it. He said, oh, this feels so good. I just wish they would take that away from him and take him out of our caucus.
I don't, you know, when, what's that old saying? When you lie down with dogs, you get up with fleas?
Yeah.
Isn't that us right now? I mean,
oh, yeah, well, they've been lying down with worse than dogs. I mean, it's, you know, that would even be somebody that, animal that would be kind and all, but he would share it with his fleas with you.
Least in common we got.
But I can't even think of an animal that I would insult.
I know. I know.
These people are, and then you listen to them, no matter what it is, they're against it. Like they come up now with, they wanted something to help people out with the mortgages, and it would involve the bankruptcy. Oh, no, we can't have that. Can't have that. Can't have this. Can't have that. And it's just disgusting. Anyhow.
I know.
But the thing is,
Juanita, with the process called budget reconciliation, Joe Lieberman doesn't matter. They could have used budget reconciliation months ago if they really wanted to solve this problem.
But so now it's too late.
Yeah.
But anyhow, I mean, like the guy said, who did you say, Friedman? To scrap it?
Howie Klein.
Howie Klein. There's still a good thing about that. Just let everybody that doesn't have it, give them the opportunity to have Medicare, and we'll start from there. But do it right away. Have it declared. Because our country, people are suffering really bad. And it's going to get worse, I mean, if we don't do something about all this evil healthcare system we have, these insurance companies. You know, when I was a little girl, that we didn't have insurance. Maybe people did. I don't know. You either paid to go to the hospital or you didn't go, or they let you pay on time. But I don't know. And we did have county hospital, too, a long time ago.
Right.
They did away with that a few years ago. We finally got, it was a whole lot better than any of the hospitals. You were treated decently and everything. And the commissioners decided to do away with it. Gone with the wind. And another thing is they can do something. I mean, look at Roosevelt's. Have these WPA jobs. There's all kinds. You know, the Black caucuses, they're coming together, you know, the ones in the Congress. You know, and saying, listen, you got to help people out. They had a press meeting today.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that. Did you see that?
I did not see it. I read of it.
Yeah. They said, this has got to stop. And so this is something that will help everybody. A lot of people don't realize if you help a certain group of people who are more depressed than anybody, distressed than anybody, you're going to help everyone. But, you know, growing up in the South, I know that we had it rough, but I know that the Black people had it a whole lot rougher just because they were Black. You know?
Yes.
Just because, and for no other reason. And now they've got this idea that if we get rid of all the gays, our country's going to be perfect, I suppose. That's what they think. But I don't know. But it is a mess.
Well, you know, I've got an email in from our pal Cindy, who the subject line is, the president two-faced or what? And she notes, as protests against bank bonuses erupt on Wall Street, President Barack Obama tells CEOs that he won't let their lobbyists thwart financial reform. And she says, the president won't let bank lobbyists thwart financial reform, but he lets lobbyists thwart health care reform, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, it's time to engage. It's time to get bust out a little Harry Truman here, isn't it?
Yeah. Absolutely.
If the bully pulpit of the presidency is not sufficient to speak up for the Jacqueline Kellys of the world, right. Juanita, what the heck good is it for?
Right. And he could be the greatest president. He could maybe outpass Roosevelt if he would just do some of the things maybe in a different ways that Roosevelt did, take some of his bold steps. And I'm not saying he hasn't done nothing, and I know that we're better off without those other people. But I'm telling you, if they don't change, it's going to be those other people again, and it's going to be worse. Like you said before, we think Bush was worse, but he kept...
No, there's another one out there. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Sarah Palin, congratulations.
Right. Well,
yeah, I saw a little cartoon depiction the other day that I think I'm on board with. It showed President Obama driving a tank with the Nobel Peace Prize around the barrel of the tank.
That was rather ironic, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then another one that showed Sarah Palin standing there with her book and a little medal hanging around her neck that says Nobel Prize for Literature. And I say, what the heck? Why not?
Well, the way everything is, it just gets crazier and crazier. Could very well happen. She has a guy that's going around saying it's the greatest piece of literature. And
yes, and he's very well paid.
Oh, gee.
You know, I was in our local Kroger the other day. And, you know, there's a significant space in that store that's dedicated to paperbacks and hardback books and things like that, at least for a big grocery store, it seems significant.
Yeah.
And there must have been 24 copies of that hateful book. And I just stood there with my little mouth hanging open, catching flies, Juanita, thinking, you know, some innocent shopper is going to come through here, desperate for a Christmas present, and they're going to think, you know, she's pretty. I think I'll get my friend over there at the church social committee a copy of this book, because you know Sarah's a real good Christian lady.
Uh huh.
And you know that's how disasters are. You know, disasters are not created generally by one big event. That they happen a little
one
little thing, another little thing, and the next thing you know some big things happened.
Yeah, it's like people like us. We're seeing this going on, and other people don't realize. And these people that think that things are going to disaster now, they don't know they've been living in disaster.
Yes.
At least they do.
Yes, you have said that so much. I've been trying to say that for a couple of weeks, and you just said it in a couple of seconds so much better than I've tried to say. But yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, Juanita, I sure do appreciate... you sort of stepping up and saying, there's not a lot that we as just the American people out there can do in between elections. But one of the few decent things that we can do is since our elected betters don't, the least that we can do is to remember and reverence and honor all the hard work that went into the life of a lady like Jacqueline Kelly.
Yeah.
Because our politicians will not mourn us. Not you, not me, not anyone else. Because we never gave them any money, really.
Mm-hmm.
We never did much for them. All we did was put them in office. And so when our time comes, we will not be remembered. But the thing that you and I and the rest of us can do is we can at least honor what we know was a life that was lived as a struggle, but that contained ever so much joy and whose end was met bravely, but was met without any sort of so much as a give a hoot from the likes of Joe Lieberman.
Yeah, you know, I saw this weekend, I saw a documentary about Carlton Pearson.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, it probably have been on before, you know, about his different way of looking at things.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't you say you had him on your show one time?
Oh, yes. It was one of the most fascinating conversations we ever had. Yeah.
And I was listening to it. Now, there's certain things I don't think I can agree with it, but it doesn't mean I'm right and he's wrong. you know, about like, yeah, Hitler's in heaven, but, you know. But anyway, he was talking about how he got healed from the hurt. And it was by these people that it was a mostly gay church. Mm-hmm. They washed his feet. And I thought, you know, I met him years ago.
Really?
And I had, they were like the group. He was with the Oral Roberts University. He was a singer. And I thought, oh, these people are just going to be so wonderful and sweet. He was the only one. He was so special. He was so nice and kind. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I've got a lot of respect for him.
Oh, yes. Oh yes, and I hope he's continuing to do well, because when he announced his break with traditional hate-filled fundamentalist doctrine, yeah. They did everything but call for his death.
And you know, they told him he's going to hell, and he was surprised. He thought they would be glad to hear it, I guess, but no, but you know, he had to be special to have that light turned on for him. And like I say, I don't agree with him 100%, but like I say, that doesn't mean I'm right and he's wrong. He could very well be completely right.
Well, you know, that's the thing about religion. It's kind of a crapshoot. I mean,
he said, you know, that the religion, it kills. It destroys people.
Yes.
He thought his...
And remember, you know, one of the things that sort of flows from what I understand of him, is that we have to understand that if, for instance, there are 1,000 religions on the planet, every one of us are atheists with regard to at least 999 of them.
Yeah, in their opinion. Is that what you mean?
Right, because every religion says that it is the way.
Yeah, I saw a movie last night. It was a Danish movie made in 1955, and I happened upon it. And I watched a lot more something this morning. It had the title. It was called Ordet, which means the word, and was just amazingly wonderful. It won the best film, foreign film, at the Academy that year. And if anybody's ever heard of it, it was based on a play that was written back in the 30s by a Lutheran minister, and he in Denmark, and he was spoke out. He thought Hitler was good at first, you know, because he had organized Germany, but it didn't take him long to catch up. I looked all this up. It did take him long, and of course, eventually he spoke out, and he got killed by the Gestapo. So it fits him. With a lot of that, it was based on a person in the family that had been brain injured, and he thought he was Christ. But almost everything he said was so truthful, but they rejected it because his father rejected it because he said, well, he's crazy. But who was crazy? Who is crazy and who's not? But it was, to me, it was just absolutely amazing. It was hard to read, you know, to have to read the words.
Yeah, it's tough to read a movie.
Yeah, but I got into it. And I would love to see the whole thing. And it's O-R-D-E-T, if anybody's interested.
I will start getting emails any minute now giving me the complete lowdown of the film. You know how it goes around here.
Yeah.
Juanita, have a wonderful evening.
Thank you
so much for sharing your thoughts.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And a quick trip to the mailbag. You know, I never know when I share a story what sort of impact it's going to have. Maura has written in from New Jersey. The subject line of her email is, I hate Joe Lieberman. Bob. Isn't it amazing that a man who claims to be religious goes against all that is good and right? Mrs. Kelly's story truly hits me at home. She lived a few blocks from me and was treated at the hospital
that always takes care of me. Oh. Of course, I'm not in the least surprised that someone who claims to be a follower of religion is blind, deaf, and dumb to the tenets of that religion. Joe, and let's be clear, I don't think that Joe Lieberman is any more a follower of the truths of Judaism than I thought that Jerry Falwell was a follower of the truths propounded by Yeshua, by Jesus Christ. Or that, for instance, Osama bin Laden is or was a follower of Muhammad. Not even a little bit. This in from Jude. Bob, possibly the Horn family would find it from within to call, email, or write Joe Lieberman and personally state how we individually feel and think about hearing of the death of Mrs. Kelly, even though we may not have known her. We know, all caps, we know of her existence here in America. Indeed, a beautiful idea. Marty writing in, and Marty has a bit of a cynical streak, I fear. Remember, Bob, this is America you're talking about. Unless someone's being screwed over, you may change out screwed for effed. It just ain't American. You know, there's some idiot teabagger applauding Mrs. Kelly's death, saying she should have bought insurance anyway, you know, without money. Remember the woman fan of GW's who said she worked 3 jobs and seemed happy about doing it, and the applause at GW saying that she was uniquely American? And with regard to the fact that our existences are little noted by our elected representatives, Marty adds, but with precious few exceptions, like those of us listening to the Horn, people don't realize they're in a disaster until someone on the tube tells them. Then they start trying to understand how they got there. And, you know, that really is the problem. When you are up to your ass in alligators is a bad time to think about the wisdom of entering the swamp. But Marty's right. That is, for the most part, where we are. And, of course, Cindy notes, who made Joe Lieberman so powerful? Harry Reid made Joe Lieberman so powerful. How true. How true. Apparently, Ed Schultz has a poll on his website. Senator Joe Lieberman stated that he'll oppose a health care bill that includes a proposal to expand Medicare to people as young as 55. What should Senate Democrats do with Lieberman? Answer 1, hit him where it hurts. Senator Harry Reid should strip Lieberman of his chairmanship of the Homeland Security Committee for his continued defection. That's 25%. 7% say respect his right to dissent and work towards a compromise that satisfies Lieberman and his big insurance backers. 7% say that, really? I'd love to know that 7%. That's the 7% of insurance executives who watch Ed Schultz's show. And then finally, at 68%, adopt a scorched earth policy. Throw him out of the Senate Democratic caucus, take away his chairmanships, and recruit a candidate to beat him in 2012. Cindy notes, as you can see, not many people like old Joe. Took a long time for the anger to reach crescendo, or has it?
I've hated this jerk for years. I think he cost President Al Gore a lot of support. He's a liar, a Mossad agent within our own government. I don't know that Mossad part to be the truth or a fact, but he certainly does vote like it now, doesn't he? So that's the mailbag. And if you want to reach the program, you know it's easy. Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid at gmail.com. That's the email. If you want to dial in, it's toll-free 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, H-E-A-D-O-N, head on. And if you've got some sort of long-distance dialing plan that doesn't cost you anything to call us, you can save us a nickel or a buck or two by dialing 304-658-3333, and onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hey, Kevin, what's up, brother?
Oh, nothing much. All I need to see is say three words whenever you think Barack, at least four words, with Barack Obama and him going easy on these guys. Chicago School of Economics.
Yeah, that's okay. Four words. Yep.
Chicago School of Economics. And don't forget, these guys were, you know, buttering his biscuit when people were like, Obama who?
There's a lot of truth in that.
You know, so it's like, you have to understand. This.
Yeah, otherwise known, and by the way, otherwise known as Milton Friedman U.
Yeah. And he was a professor to that. It was a steady paycheck when he was busy being an activist.
Professor of constitutional law, was he not?
Yeah. So, you know, he's beholden to, and the way those guys are funded, I know he's beholden to somebody somewhere somehow.
All politicians are they not?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I say until we get, like, public financing of campaigns, you know, regardless of how well-intentioned they are, and believe you me, you know, I still back them 100%, but I understand. You know, you got to sell your soul a little bit. You know. Like he said, you know, it's one thing to sit out here and be an armchair general and say, I would never do this, but once you're in the arena fighting, you know, you got to face the realities of being in that arena. You know.
Yes, I don't disagree in the least. I mean, I recognize. I try to be a realist about politics. I know that sooner or later, with very few exceptions, and I know whose name I will bring up as one of those exceptions.
Kucinich?
Yeah, with very few exceptions, it is impossible to do major politics in America without compromising oneself.
Oh yeah. And the sad thing is, Kucinich is probably the best politician this country has ever produced in our time. And the national media makes him look like a joke.
But the joke's on us, right?
Huh?
But the joke's on us.
Oh, yeah. Well, again, until we get the public financing, you know, unfortunately, that's what he's going to end up being.
And I just got an email in from Marty saying, if you want to see who he's answering to, Google the name Penny Pritzker. And, of course, and I did, and Penny Sue Pritzker, born 1959, is an American business executive and a member of the Pritzker family of Chicago, one of America's wealthiest business families. She is the founder and current chair of Classic Residence by Hyatt, a chain of luxury senior living communities spreading throughout the United States, and the national finance chair of Barack Obama's presidential campaign. In 2009, the Forbes 400 list of America's wealthiest showed her as the 204th richest person in the U.S., estimated net worth $1.7 billion U.S. Also in 2009, Forbes listed her as the world's 647th richest person with net worth of about $1.1 billion. On November 20th, 2008, CNN reported that Pritzker was Barack Obama's top choice for Commerce Secretary quoting multiple unnamed sources. However, it was later reported that because of her involvement in the failure of subprime lender Superior Bank, Pritzker took herself out of the running.
Wow. Okay.
She's the daughter of Donald N. Pritzker, co-founder of the Hyatt Hotel chain. And she attended, Castelleja School until 1977, earned a B.A. in economics from Harvard, and a J.D. MBA from Stanford, and she lives in the Lincoln Park neighborhood of Chicago with her two teenage children and her husband, Dr. Brian Traubert.
Okay, there you go. There you go. But, you know, I'm just saying...
Oh, but wait, you're going to love this part. I'm sorry, I'm just doing this on the fly, Kevin, not trying to interrupt. Pritzker contributed some $493,174 to numerous campaigns and political action committees since the 2000 election cycle. Among the recipients have been the presidential campaign and exploratory committees, including those of George W. Bush, Joe Lieberman, Bill Bradley, Rudy Giuliani, John McCain, Al Gore, John Kerry, and Hillary Clinton.
Wow.
I mean, you know, that's called hedging your bets.
Oh, yeah, well, that's what most of the wealthy does in this country, and this is why, you know, until we get public financing, you know, it's going to be Tweedledee, Tweedledum, you know. There goes the old boss saying it's the new boss or something along those lines. You know, that's just the way it's going to be.
Yeah.
You know, it's a sad thing that, and I tell you, I don't call him Lieberman anymore. I call him Emperor Palpatine. Okay. You know, because it seems like every time he exercises power, he ages even more now. And I'm just waiting for him to wither away somehow, but I don't think he is. It's like he... And the thing is, I have a feeling he's going to get his third term because, you know what, Hartford, that community there, and that's where most of the votes are going to come from in Connecticut.
Sure.
Yeah, he's in the back pocket. Hartford is the insurance capital of the Northeast, you know.
So, I guess it's kind of, yeah, well, sure.
You know, so you can forget it. It's like... And as long as there's money to be donated, he's gonna get it. Unless we put up like a real strong. Well, we had a real strong candidate before. You know.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know. It's just a total sellout. You know. So.
And the question is there a remedy? Is there any kind of relief? Is there anything to be done, Kevin?
Campaign finance reform. That's the only thing. We know that's not going to happen. Put it this way. This country will get into another civil war over campaign finance reform. That's how big that would be.
Yeah.
It would be like another 9/11 proportion type incident. Because the way these people operate now, and I notice, if they don't have their way, they're going to destroy everything. And they're looking to do that now anyway.
Yeah.
You know, it's sad, you know, it's like...
Well, so where health care is concerned, are you part of the contingent that says scrap it and come back with Medicare?
I'm with more like Tom Hartman, where it's kind of like, you get what you can get, because you have to understand, we got to play this hand like the Republicans played it. You know, the Republicans took the time and chipped little by little by little. And that's what we have to do by their playbook. And, you know, it's strange, you know, and we really need to start going by their playbook on a lot of things, you know. take it little by little. Go for the victory now and then come back another day. I'll even take the, anybody who's 50 and older to get on Medicare at this point.
And you know, I understand the draw of something like that, Kevin, but there's something else that needs... Every time we create something that has a cutoff line, we're going to have stories about people who die at 49 instead of 50.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing that just crawls all over me, like, you know, like a good waller in poison ivy.
Oh,
okay.
There
is no demographic in this country that is worthy of being hung out not to dry, but to die.
Well, you know, that's the sad thing. Until we have universal Medicare, that's the cold, hard realities we're dealing with, you know. Again, this is what I say, and it all goes back to that, you know, divinely elect mentality. It's like, I don't know what it is with Southern fundamentalist Christians who believe they're not worthy of being treated humanely. I don't get it.
Sinners. You know, you take a few hundred years and you beat poor folks over the head with, "You are a sinner!" And suddenly you're not worthy.
Yeah, you know.
And your betters are out there dancing in the streets. God likes me better. I got lots of money. God likes me better. I got lots of money.
Yeah, you know, and I'm sorry to say, I don't mean to put down the South, but that's what I had to get out of that mentality, because, like, one of the arguments, and people who were very close to, and who, you know, I loved a lot, okay, was like, and you know the rest of the story, but was, because I'll be like, I was like, you know, all I want is a job down here that gives health insurance. What is so difficult? What have you done to deserve health insurance? I was like, excuse me?
Oh, and by the way, Kevin, I'm paying attention in the chat room too, and I just saw this. Our buddy Benedict at Large posted in the chat room in great big letters, so it would be impossible for me to miss. Hadassah Lieberman is taking money from the Susan Komen Foundation, which was established to fight cancer. And then Lottie notes, rabbis protest Joe Lieberman. I almost missed this story. He says, the symbolism of seeing rabbis protest in this candlelight vigil seems pretty significant to me. Stamford, Connecticut, quietly holding candles, hundreds of clergymen, congregants, and reform advocates lined the sidewalks outside independent U.S. Senator Joe Lieberman's Stamford home Sunday night in a show of support for universal health care.
Oh.
You know, maybe if they'd bring some electronic voting machines with them. I don't know.
He definitely better not piss them off. But, you know, I have a feeling next election he's going to change his tune 250%, because, God, you know, if we can get a couple more Democrats, he's going to do a Phil Spector. I mean, yeah, Phil Spector, right?
Who's he going to shoot?
Oh, no, not the Phil. The guy from Pennsylvania.
Arlen, yeah, because I mean, Joe's creepy and stuff, but him with the Phil Spector hair was just too much, Kevin. You know, don't do that to me.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, yeah.
Woo! You seen that mugshot? Yee! Yeah. Huh? Ooh, huh?
Yeah, it looked like a melting rock or something.
Exactly. Hey, Kevin, have a great evening, brother.
Okay, you too, bro.
All right, talk to you soon. Bye now.
Thanks.
We're a little bit past the top of the hour. Just a couple of things to pass on to you before maybe we move on from this loathsome topic about this loathsome human, well, person. This coming in from John Aravosis at America Blog, sort of reposting something from Huffington Post. Second source confirms Rahm Emanuel personally pressed Reed to cut deal with Lieberman. The story reads as follows. This from Ryan Grimm of HuffPost Reporting. Rahm Emanuel visited Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid in his Capitol office on Sunday evening and personally urged him. You know what it sounds like when Rahm Emanuel urges somebody. Listen, you miserable mother, son of a... personally urged him to cut a deal with recalcitrant Senator Joe Lieberman, two Democratic sources familiar with the situation, said. Emanuel, President Obama's chief of staff, has long been identified as leading a faction of White House advisors who have been pushing the Senate simply to pass any health care bill, no matter how weak. His direct message to Reid, according to the source close to the negotiations, get it done, just get it done. And if you think there weren't a few other fun words in there, you don't know nothing about Rahm Emanuel. Meanwhile, this sort of puts a little bit of an interesting spin on the White House denial. Two sources close to the whole thing said that the Politico report of the arm twisting was entirely accurate. Quote, we're long past time for these kinds of games, one source said. White House spokesman Reid Cherlin stuck to the denial. Our statement is true. Now let's go back and review just for fun. What is it? What is it that was put out there? What's the quote? Question. Is the report true that's published on Politico that the White House is encouraging Senator Reid to sit down and make a deal with Lieberman and give up on the Medicare expansion? Robert Gibbs, answer. I can only say this, Anna, that the president is anxious to see progress. And we'll continue to work with Democrats and Republicans and independents and everyone in between to make that progress and take those steps. Wow, that's pretty cool. I get confirmed in a matter of minutes. The non-denial denial. Pay attention. Learn to, learn to identify a non-denial denial early on. By the way, this little update sent in by our blogger, Texas Betsy, who don't miss much. And Marty notes, well, there's your connection to the Mossad. Rahm, I think it's his father, is it not? Rahm's dad was part of the Irgun or something, wasn't he? And wasn't Rahm himself a member of the IDF? One of these days we got to do something about politicians with dual citizenship. Yeah, remember, it was Rahm's dad who, when queried about whether an Obama administration would be Israel-friendly, said, of course it will be. I mean, that's Rahm. That's my son. He's going to be the chief of staff. It's not like he's going to be some sort of Arab scrubbing the floors. Right? Isn't that what was said? Yeah, that was what was said. This in from a listener by the name of A. Nani Moose. Let me get this straight, going back to Mrs. Kelly. Let me get this straight. By virtue of the stay-at-home mom never entering the job market and never being underpaid as most are, she cut herself off from any support for those in her age range. Got it. That done to her by so many of the family values crowd. But now, those socialist pinko Euro folks, why, they think it's fine to offer up cradle-to-grave health care, bad-paying job, or no bad-paying job. Thus, a French woman, married and mother of two, feels the call to nurture, teach, and send well-shaped adults out into the world. She gets health care. But that mother of two in the U.S. that hasn't worked the shitty job, she gets squat for health care. And so we wonder, we actually wonder, why the American family looks like a floundering sick animal on a rocky seacoast. Mom hits the job market, or she dies on the hospital steps. Yeah, we wonder. You know, there's one little statistic that's tucked away down inside those notations of absolute fact And that is this. The unemployment rate in Western Europe hovers somewhere around 20%. But of that 20%, very few, if any, are starving. Of that 20%, precisely zero are going without health care or putting mason jars with taped-on Polaroid photographs at convenience store counters in the hopes of gathering nickels, pennies, dimes, quarters, the occasional $1 bill and $5 bill in hopes of getting mama some help. Doesn't happen in Europe. Meanwhile, we celebrate here and say, well, we've turned a corner, when the unemployment numbers dip from 10.2% to 10%. But we also recognize the entire time that that ain't reality. The reality is that our unemployment is the same as that of Europe. It's just that Europe counts all of theirs while we engage in a sort of dumb show or some sort of economic dishonest prestidigitation whereby we just disappear 10% of the entire population from our care or concerns. Meanwhile, none of those people in the United States, whether they are part of the 10% we acknowledge or the 10% that we don't, none of them get health care. And many of them go hungry. Now you tell me, governmentally, who is succeeding and who is failing? This in via a private message from the chat room. You know, Bob, since we don't pay for stay-at-home moms, it puts a whole new spin on the family values crowd calling for women to stay home, doesn't it? Why, yes. Yes, as a matter of fact, it does. Stay home, get sick, die. God Almighty. But I suppose that is our lot, is it not? We are at a place where ever so many of us are simply invisible. Are simply invisible. To those whom we give power. Mrs. Kelly was invisible to Barack Obama, Rahm Emanuel, Joe Lieberman, Harry Reid. I imagine that there are some members of the United States Senate, Bernie Sanders comes to mind, who might be horrified to learn of the end of Mrs. Kelly's days. I have no doubt that Dennis Kucinich would be sickened by it and morally offended. But for the most part, no. For the most part, we are talking about elected representatives whose position renders them blind. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Started rushing, hungry for some food. Dog started twitching and they're looking at you. have no sense of time. Don't mention harmony. What is it? Give a little shout, pretty much as a man. Somebody shout out. What is it?
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
And, of course, you know the number to reach the program, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email rolls in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. Easy, easy, easy. If you've never been to the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room, you oughta. It's free, it's simple, it's fun. There's a great crowd in there. Benny's in there. I'm in there. Chino Deb's in there, just popped in. Cobwebs is in there. The chat room Den Mother ELO is in there, as is John Fox, taking a break. Lottie, Pro Anti, Sparky Dunk, Sundog, TCBYS, Texas Betsy. It's a Moran Monday party in the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room. And, of course, I try to monitor the chat room as well as we go along. What the heck? Jump in. Have a blast. Sort of returning to our Moran Monday theme. from Marty. Cynical, Bob? Me? What makes you think that? Only your emails, Marty. Only your emails. Actually, you're not cynical. You are a member of the reality-based community. Maybe we repurpose Moran Monday for just another minute or so from Moran Monday to what do they think we are Morans Monday? What do they think we are Morans Monday? I don't know if you've seen this, but I read the headline and I went, well, bust my buttons. Headline, 22 million missing Bush White House emails found. And you can go and read the story for yourself. They just popped up. You know, I guess they were in, I don't know, Laura's underwear drawer or something, and who the hell would want to look in there? Computer technicians have found 22 million missing White House emails from the administration of President George W. Bush, and the Obama administration is searching for dozens more days' worth of potentially lost email from the Bush years, according to two groups that filed suit over the failure by the Bush White House to install an electronic record-keeping system. Those two groups are, of course, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, CRU, and the National Security Archive. And they announced today that they were settling the lawsuits that they had filed against the Executive Office of the President back in 2007. You remember the missing emails, right? It just sort of disappeared. And the Bush administration said, we called those guys to drive around those little Volkswagen Beetles. What do they call it? The Geek Squad? Yeah, we called the Geek Squad, and I mean, they said they couldn't find them, so I guess they're lost. Okay. But it turns out that the purloined, not lost, come on, purloined emails, were there all along. They were just mislabeled. Now, of course, former Bush White House spokescreep Scott Stanzel said that they'd already been, those 22 million emails had already been recovered while Bush was still in office, and that misleading statements, reading from the AP story, misleading statements about the former administration's work demonstrate, quote, a continued anti-Bush agenda. Nearly a year after a new president was sworn in, the liberal group's CRU and National Security Archive litigate for sport, distort the facts, and have consistently tried to create a spooky conspiracy out of standard IT issues. Well, if they were found during the Bush administration, why the hell weren't they disclosed? I mean, I'm just saying. But Ann Wiseman is quite correct. She said that those so-called missing, purloined emails, quote, would never have been found but for our lawsuits and pressure from Capitol Hill. It was only then that they did this reanalysis and found as a result that there were 22 million emails that they were unable to account for before. Don't get your hopes up, by the way, because we won't know a blessed thing about what's in them until at least 2014. And by that time, the Richard B. Dick, Big Time Cheney, may very well be some sort of cybernetic thing in orbit around the planet that no one can reach. Records released as a result of the lawsuits, however, reveal that the Bush White House was aware during the president's first term in office that the email system had serious archiving problems, which didn't become publicly known until 2006, when federal prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald disclosed them during his criminal investigation of the outing of CIA operative Valerie Plame. Now, this is the last paragraph of the story. A Microsoft Corporation document on the Bush White House's email problems states that Microsoft was called in to help find electronic messages in October 2003, more than 2 years before the problem surfaced publicly. October 2003 was the month that the Justice Department began gearing up its criminal investigation into who in the Bush administration leaked the identity of Plame, the wife of Bush administration war critic Joseph Wilson. But again, none of it's coming out until they have been dealt with in terms of presidential records, and thus and released according to required protocols. The government now can find and search 22 million more emails than it could in late 2005, and the settlement means that the Obama administration will restore 94. That's what the 22 million emails are. 94 calendar days of email from backup tape. According to former spokescreep Stanzel, the 94 days of emails to be recovered consist of 61 calendar days already planned in the Bush era and an additional 33 days of recovery that the Obama White House have agreed to recover as part of the settlement of the court case. But again, they will not be released until something like 2014. And what is being claimed is that they were mislabeled. Really, they were mislabeled. You know, they were labeled George W. Bush, Fantasy Football 2005, but actually it was 22 million emails, probably including patent evidence of criminal conduct. But or it had a little sticker on George W. Bush porn surfing, whatever. So, you know, it might be fun to sort of be around and you know, when we finally get to look and go, what a dirty bastard he was. Oh, he knew all along. So there's that. What do they think we are, morons? But no, it is Moran Monday, and there are real morons out there for our consideration. I was backing up just a second about the emails. I was talking with ELO Sue, and of the missing emails, she said, you know, it's a start. They're not as lost as they told us they were. Can't cover the oopsie anymore. I also think it ensures we'll have a neocon president in 2014 when they become public, so a preemptive Nixon-esque pardon can be issued. And see, that's where I disagree with Sue. I don't think it would take a right-wing president to issue that pardon.
I personally don't think that Barack Obama would have 10 cents worth of qualms issuing a sort of preemptive pardon for George W. Bush. It's one thing to talk about what a rotten POS George W. Bush is. It's another thing to actually subject him to a process that might actually end in something approaching or vaguely resembling justice. But remember, if you recall our little historical digression of a couple of weeks back, the Bush family doesn't do justice. At least not when it's them being subjected to it. But no, not kidding. There really are moran. Yes, Virginia, there is a moran out there. And in particular, let's start with the miserable, racist, bigoted, prejudiced morans, because they've got a song now. Oh, yes, they do. This is from Human Events. It's a little Christmas carol that they posted on their website over the weekend. You remember the Christmas carol Feliz Navidad? Yeah, I do too. Well, no message of goodwill exists that cannot be perverted into something sick and twisted by the right wing. And hence we offer you, just as a reminder of what kind of scum we're dealing with here, the Human Events version.
Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. Throw them some pesos and they work so hard. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. I don't even ask if they got green card. They're gonna pave up my driveway this Christmas. They're gonna clean all my cars this Christmas. They're gonna shovel all the snow this Christmas. Those illegals in my yard. They're gonna dig me a pool this Christmas. They're gonna landscape my lawn this Christmas. They're gonna cook me up some tacos this Christmas. Those illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. 16 arrive in a stolen car. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard, when they're not working, they sit at the bar. They're gonna drink some cervezas this Christmas. They're gonna shoot some tequila this Christmas. They're gonna get DUIs this Christmas, those illegals in my yard. They're getting free organ transplants this Christmas. They're gonna have anchor babies this Christmas. They're gonna scream si se puede this Christmas, those illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. One at a time, run past those border guards. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. Illegals in my yard. Hugo Chavez sends his kind regards. They're gonna tackle Pat Buchanan this Christmas. They're gonna chase down Lou Dobbs this Christmas. They're gonna join up with La Raza this Christmas. Those illegals in my yard. They're gonna spread bubonic plague this Christmas. They're gonna bring me lots of bedbugs this Christmas. They're gonna pass tuberculosis this Christmas. Those illegals in my yard.
Ho, 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 I don't care who you are, that's funny.
I'll bet that's the number one Christmas song on the website over at the Savage Nation. But no, it's not the Savage Nation. That's not where this comes from. It comes from a pair of creeps
a pair of absolute scum-sucking bottom feeders by the names of Matt Fox, sorry, John, and A.J. Rice. And they've got something out there that I guess goes out onto professional terrestrial radio somewhere called the Fox and Rice Experience. And they are carried by Talk Radio Network. Yeah. This is for-profit radio. And you know, it's not like these guys are new to this kind of hate. Kind of embarrassed to point this out to you, but yeah, there's certainly undocumented aliens are not the only target of their hatred, because this isn't parody. This is outright hatred. Here you go.
We take you now to the Democratic National Convention and ask, what happens when procreation goes horribly wrong?
Hi, Daddy!
Hey, sweetie! You are unbelievable.
Is Reverend Wright with you?
Thank you. You also look very cute.
Thank you! Daddy, next time I see you, I'm going to give you a big fist bump.
That's
Sasha.
Daddy, who are those white people sitting next to you?
They've just been wonderful hosts.
I'm going to P. Diddy's champagne after party, Daddy.
I'll see you guys on Thursday, all right? Love you guys.
Love you. Bye-bye.
Bye, Daddy. I love you. Assalamu alaikum, my brother.
When procreation goes horribly wrong.
Yeah, so much for pro-birth right-wingers. When procreation goes horribly wrong. This is the kind of stuff that birthers and baggers and deathers and tenthers and boogers think is terribly, terribly funny. Mocking a child. You know, we're not talking about some drunken 20-year-old rolling around a bar floor somewhere in Austin with a cigarette between two fingers and a long neck Budweiser in the other that she's too young to purchase. No. We're talking about a child. We're talking about a little one. We're talking about a baby. But the hatred that is reserved for that man of darker skin in the White House knows no bounds of taste or decency. Welcome to professional radio. Welcome to radio that is propped up by right-wing corporations to make sure that the hate is always there for anyone who wants to access it. Cindy says, illegals in my yard. Oh, I don't think many Hispanics would like that song. Try playing that on the West Coast and they'll plan a march around your station. Why not find out where these creeps broadcast from and go march around it regardless of where it is? I'm sorry, Marty. Please play the real one after this. I'd like my brain cleaned out of this. Marty, I don't have the real one. I don't have an extensive collection of Christmas music. Wait a minute. Hold on. Just let me check. I might, but no guarantee. You know what? If this qualifies as the real one, good, because this is an awesome one. And, yeah, we will clean your ears out of this because relatively long, long time ago, our music consultant, David in Tennessee, decided that I was in need of some Christmas music I might not otherwise have. And I got this, and this is awesome. This is just wonderful. This isn't a parody. This really is Feliz Navidad, but it's Feliz Navidad like you have never, ever heard before. I hope. Me some punk. Makes me feel all better and clean and stuff. I'll have to at some point when that's just magnificent. ELO, that's Horn Pepto Bismol, all right. God, punk special. We're going to the phones just in a moment here, but I want to share a couple of emails with you that sort of come in here and there. First, from Jude, who suggested an email or a phone call to Lieberman's office. Jude is forever thinking of how we connect and how we communicate what we connect when we connect. Her spirit is very, very good. And she says, on reflecting about the letting Lieberman know our feelings and thoughts, literally our feelings and thoughts, it should be done via a phone call. Joe Lieberman's office personnel must be required to hear our voices with our inflections, our tone, our emotions. Reminds me of the day I called the offices of Representatives Bachman, Boner, Cantor, and others, voicing from the perspective of a retired hospice nurse, how some of my former families felt viewing the large poster of piled-up bodies from the Holocaust. I released it all to the women who answered the phones. They were quiet, reflective in dealing with me. The process of coming as close and personal as possible, as you well know, Bob, is always the most effective. One may never know what type of change occurs as the person having to listen is left with the residual of those calls from us. It is doing one's part, never ignoring what seems hopeless or ineffective. Simply not our call. We are called to the process of action individually. Peace, she says. Thank you, Jude. And this from William, in reference to my assertion that many of us simply become invisible to our elected representatives. William says, my brother became one of the invisible ones. He was the youngest of the four siblings in my family. 4 months after he was diagnosed with inoperable liver cancer and radiation treatments that were shrinking the golf ball-sized tumor, he was told there was nothing more they could do and sent off to a hospice. To this day, I cannot imagine him hearing the words, there is nothing more we can do. We spoke every day as he said, I'm going to beat this thing. My last call to him was in the hospice where he could only make motorboat sounds, and he died a few hours later. His hospice stay was 3 days. This was the 11th of June, 2001. He was 47. It was not that they could not do more. It was that his HMO year capped out. He became invisible. All he had was given out, and all he was became a memory. And for what? Money. Money. And it's hard to... it's hard to live through any one of those. But if there is any consolation, and there isn't... You know, I watch this whole thing unfold, and I realize that I think part of the reason that it gnaws at me so grossly is because my second eldest sister was one of those invisibles. She was poor. She had, living in Alabama, she had absolutely zero access to any health care whatsoever. You know, Alabama-stan. And one morning, she looked at her beloved and said, I don't feel so good. And she went upstairs and got in the tub and died. At about maybe 61 years of age, her heart simply gave out, and she became one of the invisible. And we have an abundance of invisible, an overabundance, a surfeit of invisible in this country. And the question remains whether we are willing as a people to tolerate that some significant portion of our selves are invisible. Not invisible by definition, but rendered invisible by processes created by miserable, godless, soulless, motherless, right-wing punks and thugs. Are we willing to tolerate Holy Joe Lieberman rendering thousands of us invisible every year? I can't answer that question. I can answer it, but only for myself. I can't answer it for you. It's something that you must contemplate in your own private place. and reach a conclusion. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob?
Hey, Jethro.
I'm having another one of them dilemmas.
You got you a dilemma?
I got so many dilemmas, I got too many choices. I mean, I got, I can choose from hate-mongering, fear-mongering, war-mongering, revolution, racism.
There's just too much mongering going on.
And then I got the kind of the harlot mongering. I can watch watch interviews with every one of Tiger Woods' call girl buddies. Well, how did you and Tiger meet? Well, I really loved him, and I knew he was married, and I like to inject, but I'm a hoe. I was worried about Tiger and his family. But you're a hoe? I don't get it. Is it because Tiger's black and he's popular and they can't destroy Obama yet? Or so, you know, is Tiger the whipping boy here?
You know what? I hadn't considered it from that angle, Jethro, but that makes an abundance of sense. We gonna get us somebody brown.
I mean, you know. It's Good Morning America, whatever Matt Lauer's on, and Mayor's somebody. You know, they did two different interviews in different hours with one of the hoes. Well, you know, I was really in love with him, but you're a hoe. So, I have never seen that on TV before. You're interviewing these, you know, they used to call them, party girls, I guess you could say.
Yeah, it's sort of a perverse reversal of the whole Washington slept here kind of concept, right?
Yeah. And sure they marketed Tiger. And, you know, sure he had a reputation as being liking the ladies. So what? You know, it's his business, not mine. So I don't see the focus on that. So much focus on that. It's just madness, buddy.
It is. It's madness in all caps.
And speaking of morons, did you read the thing about this world-renowned photographer being roughed up down in the...
Yeah, oh, man, am I glad you brought this up.
Charleston Mall.
Yeah, a world, and he's not a, now it's kind of important to note, Jethro, he's not a photographer, he is a videographer, okay?
Yeah.
A world-renowned, award-winning, you know, something darn near approaching Pulitzer status.
One of them professionals.
Yeah. But he was off the clock. And you can tell he was off the clock because he was using one of them little bitty pissant cameras, right?
Right.
And he was taking pictures inside the Charleston Town Center Mall when he got roughed up by the cops.
Yeah. Well, he was taking pictures of a choir, and this is how all this fear-mongering and all this Glenn Beck stuff, everybody is so paranoid and so suspicious, and, you know, catching all these predators. They think everybody's out. He was taking pictures, and two men approached him about a few minutes later and demanded that he delete the pictures of these young girls. So
I guess he got a picture of a little girl sitting on Santa's lap.
Yeah, something like that, in a public place. So, I mean, he deleted them right in front of these two overly concerned, paranoid parents. So the next thing you know, that wasn't good enough for the parents. They go and tell the cops something. Next thing you know, the cops up there going, what are you doing taking pictures of them little girls? So he says, well, I'll take a picture of you. And then that's when the lines start to blur.
Yeah, well, that's when the cop puts his hand up to the camera to knock the camera to the ground and destroy it, and the guy bats the cop's hand away. The cop was not on duty. And this all took place, within a week or so ago at the Charleston Town Center Mall in Charleston, West Virginia. And the cop then put him to the ground, damn near broke his arm behind him.
Right. Put him in the hammerlock and told him, if it, and the guy was telling him it would dislocate and,
Yeah, I got a bad shoulder. You're about to dislocate it. Please don't dislocate my shoulder.
And he said, well, if it dislocates, we'll call JanCare. We'll call the ambulance. So, yeah, it looks like a big lawsuit that's going to
happen. Yeah, off-duty cop who's moonlighting as a rent-a-cop for the mall security.
Yeah, well, but they let them, and they've had trouble there before with this double-dipping. They've had two big trials, and they're letting them wear their uniform and their gun and stuff. And the line between what a mall cop can do and what, you know, the off-duty cop that suddenly becomes on-duty so he can arrest this guy on some chump charges and, you know, it's not good.
No, and it's funny, the spokeswoman for the mall said, well, you know, typical patrons of the mall are welcome to take photographs. And that's where she stepped in it, because the guy was not on duty, and he's not a, and that's why I made a point, Jethro, of noting the guy's not a photographer. He is a videographer, and there's a big difference between the two.
Right. And there's another suit. Some guy was taking pictures of the state police or something at the courthouse building there in Charleston, and one police car was trailing two handicapped spots, and they came over and arrested that guy and roughed him up. So, it's, I guess the police don't like having your picture taken, but the point out is, you know, in a democracy, the police need to, you know, to act the way that the public wants them to. They need to be, you know, to be accountable to the public. And this, you know, but in a police state, you know, you have to adjust your actions to suit the police.
Absolutely. And that's part of it. It is a police state. You know, when you see these guys in their riot gear and stuff, there's no more, you know, name on the uniform. And the badge numbers are covered up if there's a badge.
Oh yeah, well, I saw one at the anti-mountaintop removal rally there. Had the big greens on and looked all militaried up, and I didn't say West Virginia police, state police had special ops on it.
Yeah.
I was going, special ops? What's he doing down here? Of course, I don't know what they thought was going to, at least they didn't have the automatic weapons.
Well, I was going to say, if you recall the June 23rd rally down at Marsh Fork, I don't know if you were there or not, Jethro, but there were snipers on the roof of Marsh Fork Elementary for that one.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a little bit. But, you know, the fact of the matter is we're a bunch of peaceniks. I don't know, maybe they would have come in handy if one of the MTR violence brigade had started shooting.
I hear you.
But then again, I don't care how good a sniper you are. I'm not crazy about the notion of shooting into crowds.
I hear you. So, yeah, it's just madness. I'll tell you what. So, I was reading Maureen Dowd's column over the weekend.
Yeah, she hates everybody.
Yeah, well, her column was pretty much, you know, our puppets aren't what they used to be. Because she had accompanied Gates over to Iraq and Afghanistan. And where they were pretty much dictating the terms to Gates, because they know no matter how much they did or whatever they do, we're stuck spending billions of dollars no matter what. We're in there and we're stuck, and they know it. So it's and you know, they were, you know, Obama saying we're going to get out of that, start